All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. It's a new take on the classic animated cartoon series from The Lonely Island Guys, starring Andy Samberg and John Mulaney as Chip and Dale, and a whole bunch of comedy people in the voices, and it's very ridiculous and irreverent and weird, and I didn't like it that much. Everybody seems to love it, but my guest, Chauncey Talese, who is returning to the podcast, he loved it, and so does pretty much everyone else I know. I had a lot of fun talking about it, regardless of how much I liked it. So that conversation is coming up in a second. Before we do get to the conversation, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what we do here on the show, you can rate and review us. Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podchaser, Spotify. 5 stars would be awesome, guys. We really appreciate that. But just continue listening and make sure you're subscribed. That is also awesome. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget to check out our Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post advanced and bonus content from all of the podcasts I'm involved with. That's this show, Piecing It Together, also Awesome Movie Year. And then from my music career, I'm currently scoring a film and will be posting some sneak peeks on there very soon. I'm getting there. It's a lot of work, but I'm getting there. So that's that. Let's talk about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. All right, Chauncey Talese is back with us. We are going to talk about Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. Woo-hoo! Chauncey, how's it going?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to be the grouch on this episode and be the only person who doesn't like this movie.
No, you're not the only one. I've seen a handful of ones that didn't like it, but I was surprised when people I expected to hate it loved it. So I'm like, okay, I'm not just being, you know, unsophisticated.
Right.
even some of the cranks liked it. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, there's some people who share my sentiment, but yeah, it does seem like a lot of critics who traditionally only like, you know, maybe a little stuffier movies or stuff that's not just so silly as this. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get into it more as we're getting through this conversation. I don't know what it is about these like reference-based comedies that I'm just not connecting with. I mean, I used to like Family Guy. I like, you know, South Park when they reference things. Like, but it's just, I don't know, it's just not working for me. And it'll come up in some of the puzzle pieces, but there are other things that try to do this that I also didn't really like, and I guess some people liked, but I
think I know why. Well, were you a huge Chippendales kid when you were little?
I wouldn't say huge, but I definitely liked it. I loved the Nintendo game.
Same too. Yeah. And also, I think mostly like people get hung up on the cameo aspect, and it's like, how are they used? Because like I'm sure one of the puzzle pieces will come up, but there is something recently that was doing it inorganically as opposed to like this, where I felt mostly it was organic.
Okay.
There was one thing at the end where I was like, all right, like, okay. Like, but other than that, everything felt organic.
Yeah. And I'll say also, like, I mean, just throwing it out there right now, my biggest laugh of the movie was something that was basically inorganic, which is the Seth Rogen bit where all of the different Seth Rogen characters all kind of joined up and all had his Seth Rogen laugh. And I'm like, I laughed at that. I mean, I don't see how you could not laugh at that. But is it necessary? No, it still made me laugh.
It's still organic and enough to where it's like commenting on animation. He's someone who's done like a lot of it and even like, oh, and he's even doing this, but now he's doing it as a mocap character.
Yeah,
like I get it. Like that part worked for me. It wasn't like totally, you know, it wasn't I'll just spoil one of them, like Free Guy, where it just all of a sudden, hey, Captain America shield lightsaber, even though we never mentioned them at any point at all.
Yeah, you know, we have access to it, so let's just do it.
That's where I don't like it. Whereas like most of this felt a lot like my other puzzle pieces, where it feels organic and a lot of it was actually story based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, we're already kind of like teasing some of our pieces, so we might as well get into it, and we'll get into more about the movie along the way. But what do you have for your first puzzle piece for Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers?
So for my first one, I'm going to go with an obvious one, Wreck-It Ralph/Ralph Breaks the Internet, because they both are, you know, in concert with each other. This is one of those where it works because a lot of the cameos in Wreck-It Ralph are very, they don't dominate it. Like Sonic's only in a scene in both of them. Like, and even it's a half scene just to give like a quick thing of exposition. It's like, oh, hey, Sonic. And then he's gone. Doesn't dominate the plot at all. Even like the cameos in the villain support group, like they don't dominate the thing. If you don't know it, that's fine. Like you don't need to know it to know why it works. You get that they're villains. Yeah. Even the princess bit in Wreck-It Ralph and Ralph Breaks the Internet works because A, it's a funny sketch, and B, they do come back later. And the whole bit about them not like being upset that like, oh, a man has to come save us when they save Ralph at the end of the day. Like it's organic in that sense. And that's what I appreciate. Like Chip and Dale has a lot of that too. Like Ugly Sonic is both a funny bit, but he also comes back.
Sure.
Like the whole bit, like you're not, I don't have an FBI show. You're a loser. It's like, no, I do have an FBI show. I do know the FBI. And a lot of the people they meet along the way. I'm like, okay, well, this is also organic. Cause they're not, it's not just like, here's, you know, reference.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many parts that people like in private conversations, like me, you know, talking about how much I really wasn't laughing or wasn't enjoying this. There's so many parts that people bring up and I start laughing and it's just in the movie. I wasn't laughing because I was like, oh God, I was just like, you know, getting exhausted by it all. But yeah, I mean, just the fact that Ugly Sonic is there is pretty great.
It's Tim Robertson.
Yeah, exactly. That too. That it's him doing the voice is kind of amazing.
And I also felt just like a lot of them populated the world correctly. Like Peter Pan, like I understand why he's a villain. I know that was kind of a controversial thing to come out of it, but I was like, I can't believe they fucking went for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you know, you would show Scrooge McDuck at like the bathhouse, but like it was just a quick thing. It wasn't like we're spending 5 minutes of Scrooge McDuck when we could be doing plot stuff. It was just, oh, there that is. Like it doesn't bother me when it's like that. Cause another one of my puzzle pieces does that too, but, and it also works. Like a lot of the sign gags work for me too. Like when Chip's walking the Holly Walk of Fame's like Squidward, Chun-Li, and then there's the Dobby ad of like the Dobby Dolce Gabbana ad. That's funny. Like they're not overdoing it with the cameos in that sense.
In that sense,
And even J.K. Simmons wasn't Gumby; he was just a claymation cop.
That's true.
Like they populated, they had original characters spread out. Like Wreck-It Ralph does it too. Mm-hmm. Like they have Fix-It Felix. They have Jay Lynch's character, and like I think her name's like O'Halloran. They have original characters to take up most of the stuff, and the cameos are just there to be fun little Easter eggs.
Yeah,
and don't crowd everything out.
Well, that's actually a good jumping off point to my first puzzle piece then, because mine was going to be South Park's Imagination Land special, which also, like what you're talking about, it's like you've got all of these Easter egg, you know, cameos of all these different characters that are in there. I think Zangief was in there from Street Fighter. There's all kinds of characters from various pop culture. Yeah. And but then you also have all of the South Park characters, like from various different episodes of South Park. And so you do have like a good mix of it being IP based, of it being from within its own world, from within kind of connected worlds that, you know, other Disney properties and things like that, which you do associate with Chip and Dale, even though it's not, you know, from the actual show. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you get like this big overall tapestry of characters that are from a little bit of everything. And, you know, it feels like we've been doing it so much. I mean, you brought up Free Guy, you know, we could bring up Space Jam. I'm not going to use it as a puzzle piece, but I mean, of course, I thought of the Space Jam.
That was not fair, because that's as cynical as you can get as Space Jam too.
Yes, exactly. The serververse is just like, just gross. You know what I mean? It's just a gross version of it. I would say this definitely falls somewhere in between the two, but you know, it's not as bad as Space Jam for sure. But I feel like with Imagination Land, and maybe it's just because it was the first one to do anything like this, it felt like super fresh. And also with, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone being as irreverent as they are, it's like, you know, it felt like kind of like almost dangerous and exciting, you know, back then. And again, that was a long time ago. I think it was 2007. So we hadn't really seen anything like it.
I was still in high school when they were doing that. So I remember we would talk about every week. Every week the new part would come out.
That was the golden age.
Did you see Imagination Land? Like, can you believe they brought back the critter creatures?
When I was looking it up to find out when that came out, I saw the little fact that they were hoping to make that a movie. Like, that was going to be the second South Park movie, but there was some behind the scenes, whatever, and they ended up just having to make it an episode of the show. And then a trilogy of episodes, of course, but, but yeah, that was the plan initially. Like, let's get all of these characters and make a movie.
And they won the Emmy for it.
It was an Emmy. That's right. You're totally right on that. But all right, let's go to your next piece.
Mine is a TV show. I don't know if you remember it, Greg the Bunny.
Oh, I kind of remember this.
It was with Seth Green, Eugene Levy, a young Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
They worked on a bootleg Sesame Street show. But the whole bit is like the puppets and humans interact in the same world. They like have little separate doors for the smaller puppets, like on the larger human doors. Mm-hmm. And Chippendale does a lot of that too. Like Chip's house is like a small house in a normal neighborhood. And his dog is like bigger than him. And like there's a bunch of ways like they integrate the Toons into the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, a puzzle piece I know we both have, does this a lot too. But it does a lot of world building. Like Greg the Bunny, being a really funny show. Like if you ever have a chance to it's not streaming anywhere, but like it was a solid 2-season show. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of really good Sesame Street jokes, and it's just really fun to see Eugene Levy be Seth Green's dad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good cast.
And he's like he's like a pretentious director.
Nice. Yeah, I kind of want to watch that. That sounds like fun.
It was on Fox for like 2 years, and then Idol came in and just kind of like ate up that time slot, and then just like it never got to recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but I mean, this one does a good job of integrating, because like Chip works in insurance, and it's not, no one's ever like, hey, you're a weird tune. It's just all accepted.
Yeah.
Which that show does really, really well. And what Chippendale did really well. Like, I bought that, like, humans and toons interact, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, they really need to nail that, like, with the various different mediums interacting, because that is kind of the point here. And, like, I'll just use that as a jumping off for my next piece, because I was going to talk about the Jungle Book and Lion King live-action reboots.
Mm.
And just the idea of, like, this is what we're doing now with movies. We're going to take all these cartoon movies and turn them into, you know, quote unquote live action, and how kind of ridiculous that is. So let's just basically screw that idea up with the Chippendales reboot.
Right. And they do a good job of commenting on that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I again, you know, I'm not going to just keep saying over and over apologizing for not like really liking the movie that much.
I don't like it.
I love the idea of that. I love the idea of, like, from within, just, you know, commenting on how silly that is to keep doing that over and over. And we're getting more and more of these things. There's, like, at least 2 or 3 more on the timeline right now, I believe, the release schedule.
What, the live-action Disney?
Yeah, we've got Little Mermaid coming. We've got... is there a Bambi coming?
They keep teasing it, but there's nothing. There's no director. There's no nothing. They're like, they want to do Hercules. Like, I thought that was going to happen very quickly, but like, for whatever reason, that sort of stalled.
Mm-hmm.
But Little Mermaid's like really the last big one I think they've got coming.
Okay.
Unless there's something I'm missing. Like, I know like Little Mermaid, that teaser will definitely be part of Avatar 2.
Oh,
I can tell you exactly what that teaser is going to be. It'll like be the Halle Berry singing at Part of Your World, all the montage of the greatest hits play, and then they show her like quickly at the end. Like that'll be that, because I think it's there like June next year.
That sounds about right,
or something like that. Like it's coming. Like I'm like, oh yeah, I keep forgetting it's happening.
You know what it is? We're getting a Lion King sequel.
Oh, well, with Barry Jenkins. Which, I'm a little interested. Like, I know people like wince, but I'm like, if he wants to do it, because he doesn't have to.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't think he's someone who's just like openly like wanting a check, which he's getting. Yeah. But like, I don't think he's like, I'm selling out. Like, he's like, I want to do something cool with this. I want to try something.
Yeah. And I mean, I imagine it must be a little bit fun to play with that kind of a budget. You know what I mean? And that's not
but
really
how often
his...
you get to.
Yeah, it's not like his kind of lane normally, so it's like it must be like an interesting experience if nothing else. But yeah, I mean, I love the Jungle Book remake.
Me too.
Like, I it's so good. Lion King wasn't as good. I think it just doesn't lend itself as well to the, you know, that kind of storytelling. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see when this this Little Mermaid one comes out. We'll see how that works.
Well, with Lion King, the reason why it doesn't work as well as Jungle Book is A, like Jungle Book has like a real human for you to like, have your vision based off of.
Yeah.
Like he's interacting with stuff, so you're grounded.
So you're grounded,
and then
yeah.
Also, Lion King took away all the cartoon flourishes. Like in I Just Want to Be King, there's no spotlight. Mm. There's like none of that stuff. Like it's very like, no, they're real animals. Like, well, just own it. Like, just be cartoony. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the stuff Timon and Pumbaa do in like the original, like they very cartoony.
Yeah.
Like, they swing off of vines. Their faces get really, really like stretched out when like they're scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like exactly. That's what you're missing is the cartoon element. And like the live action Jungle Book had a little of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the performances are just better.
Was it Scarlett Johansson, I think, that played the snake?
She was Scar. And yeah. Bill Murray was con artist Baloo, which I really enjoyed.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, how would that not be good? But so let's go on to another puzzle piece. What do you got next?
Pop Star Never Stop Stopping.
Ah, there you go.
Because I'm like, this is very much a Lonely Island thing. Like, there's a lot of Lonely Island bits in it, like when they're trying to rap, and it's, of course, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think, oh, there's going to be that moment where Chip's actually good, or Chip and Dale are actually good rappers, and nope, like, it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a total Sandberg, like, awkward, I'm just going to keep this going. Dale is even played as sort of Connor for real.
Yeah.
Like, he nuked the show because of his own insecurity and ego, and he didn't have to, and then he's, like, trying to keep everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Chip is very much like a Kiva Schaefer's character, where he's just kind of, like, normal job, normal guy. But also, like, secretly very bitter everything fell apart.
Sure.
I mean, there isn't a Yorma equivalent in that one, but, like, that's kind of the idea. And also just, like, openly just riffing on everything that they're doing. Like, they're very well aware of, like, what kind of thing they're making fun of. Like, when they say, yeah, there's going to be a very serious version of the Chip and Dale song playing overhead, like, in a reboot. And it understands what it is. And the Lonely Island have their own take on it. And you can tell they like the material, too. It isn't just like Akiva's like, yeah, I kind of need a hit or something. Like, there's no, like, nobody's Dirk Diggler outside of the Denny's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no one's selling themselves out. It's very much like, yeah, we really enjoyed this. Cause you can tell, cause like they went to painstaking detail to recreate like the VHSs. They made sure they had the VHSs, the merch. Like, they knew the show. It wasn't like, oh, well, we're just going to like watch a couple Chippendales and like reference stuff. It's like they know the show. They know what they're parodying. And they also made sure to bring back Tress McNeil as Gadget, which I very much appreciated.
Yeah, you could tell that they have a real reverence for that show, and that they know exactly what they're doing with all of these characters and how they would, you know, how they would work in this kind of a version of the story.
Exactly. And yeah, and it's very, there's a lot of Lonely Island bits in there. Like a lot of the Lonely Island style jokes I appreciated.
Yeah. I will say the rapping, maybe
it
not
went
necessary.
On too long, but like, that's the point.
And it's 2022. I think we're past the bad rapping. I mean, I know they push the joke further and further, that whole Saturday Night Live like sensibility of just constantly pushing the joke until it's not funny anymore and then keep on going. But like, I mean, I think we're past bad rapping at this point.
And they wanted to make fun of the chipmunks, which they really went in on, which I appreciated too.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, talking about this being, you know, the Lonely Island sensibility, the other sensibility that I think is like really on display here is the Lord and Miller sensibility.
Yes,
and so I had the Lego movie.
Mm-hmm, yeah, me too.
It's like that just nonstop energy, nonstop fast pace, you know, both jokes and visual gags just constantly coming at you. And that's why it's like hard to say that I like straight up didn't like this movie, because when you have that kind of energy behind it, it's hard to not have at least a little bit of fun. You know, we also used the Lego movie as a puzzle piece, of course, with Free Guy last year. And that's why, again, with Free Guy, it's hard to not at least have a little bit of fun with it, even if you don't like the whole referential humor. It's still just nonstop gags and nonstop, like, little funny bits and pieces. And so there's still something to really get out of it.
And Lego Movie and Lego Batman, which is, I'm just going to use that as my next piece because they work hand in hand.
Sure.
They both use a lot of IP. Like in a Lego movie, like Morgan Freeman, like recites like a ton of like, you know, Milhouse, Michelangelo, Shaq, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like you would think that would be like okay, we get it. Lego owns or has a lot of deals with all this stuff, and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like even Lego Batman, when like the plan is to unleash all like the mostly Warner Brothers villain IP, it still, for whatever reason, works. Yeah, it's a fine line to walk. And I know, like, Lego Batman wasn't really Lord Miller, but it's, you know, that same blueprint.
Sure.
Like, it shouldn't work to have, like, Sauron just be, like, in Lego Batman world. Yeah. But it does. Yeah. And I can't identify why necessarily. Like, I think you just sort of like have to buy into it and understand that like they're doing something at least fun with it, mm-hmm. as opposed to other things that just throw references to like, see, here's candy.
Sure.
Like Free Guy does that, but I'm trying to think of other ones that like failed at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Family Guy is very hit or miss. You're like, all right, like.
In your mind, did Ready Player One fail or succeed?
I mean, it is the right answer. I give him credit for at least like being like, yeah, I gotta pump the brakes on like my own stuff. Because like in the book, it's way more like there's a lot of ET in the book, I remember.
Oh,
like,
wow.
And he's like, he knew when to like, okay, I'm not gonna like, you know, jerk myself off on this. Like, I'll throw other things in there for you, fine. But like, you know, and if you see it, cool. But like, it does dominate towards the end because like the Iron Giant would never shoot anybody. Like, when they do stuff that's, like, completely out of character and just is just there to be there, that's where I have a problem. Like, Ready Player One does that towards the end. It gets away with it, in the race and stuff. Like, oh, that's cool, the DeLorean and, like, all, you know, the Mach 5, that's neat. Like, if it was a video game, I believe that would be there. But, like, towards the end, it gets a little much.
Yeah.
And just very, that's an example of inorganic. Like that's something I don't really think you can control if you're doing something like Ready Player One, which is inherently like, look at me, it's referenced the book.
Yeah. Which is, it's the whole point. So
and he tries to say something at the end, but it gets kind of bogged down because the material inherently doesn't lend itself to that. Because it doesn't, I don't know how the book ends, but I'm pretty sure it isn't like, hey, go outside. Which is what Spielberg wanted it. Like, look, this is cool, but like, there's a whole world out there, I promise you.
I got a message for these kids, and I got to get it in there.
Oh, and the Legos work because also, like, it's really through the prism of a kid playing with Legos, and that's really how kids would play. Mm-hmm. Like, they would have Batman jump on the Millennium Falcon just to steal the hyperdrive.
Yeah,
like, that's true. Like, they would do stuff like that. So, like, I guess that's why that works.
Yeah, I guess it is just, like, pure unbridled imagination and... Mm-hmm. That's exactly.
And you would have those Lego sets. Like, I wasn't a Lego kid. I was more of a Micro Machines kid, but like I had Star Wars Micro Machines that intermingled with other ones.
Yeah.
And it was never weird.
Yeah. No, never. Never at all. But we were kids, so. I'll go to another puzzle piece. A movie that I liked probably less than Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, but I think is a good comparison to make in this particular moment in fandom. Mm-hmm. And where we are as a culture of entertainment consumers. Jay and Silent Bob reboot taking place at fan conventions, like through most of it.
I have a similar piece for this too, because there's a phenomenon in the mid-2000s, because that's like peak Comic-Con was like 2008 through 11.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever been.
I haven't. No.
I went in 2009 and 2010, and then like right after that,
I've been to E3, but not.
No, it's not the same. No. Like they get the vibe right, but it's like you really have to like know it, and you have to like it. Which by the end of Comic-Con, you're like, this was fun, but then you're like, oh god, that was very exhausting. And this is before it was like almost cumbersome to get into stuff.
Yeah.
It was like 2010, the last year I went, was like the last year where it was like it was hard to do stuff, but not like you have to like camp out for 3 days to just see like the Twilight panel at 5 o'clock on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could still, it was, everything was still doable, but it was getting much. And like,
yeah,
Jay and Silent Bob reboot does that. Ted 2 was my other one, because that's where it culminates, I believe, is at a Comic-Con.
Sure. Yeah. Community, I forgot about that actually. Yeah.
Community does a Comic-Con, because like I've seen the Family Guy and Cleveland Show panel at Comic-Con. Like, it's very like, I get why, because he was like a mainstay. And McFarlane would moderate. McFarlane, Green, they would all moderate panels like at various points. Like, yeah, Comic-Con culture got really rough in the mid-2000s.
Well, and it all led to where we're at right now, I think. But
all the studios are like, this sucks. Like, why do I need to spend like I don't know, $5 million to have a giant Scott Pilgrim like billboard on the side of like a hotel, of like the Hilton?
Yeah.
And like, it's gonna bomb, and like, we're just losing money. Like, this isn't helping us. Like, at first they thought it would, because like that's when like all the trailer stuff was cool. Like, oh my god, we're getting the first like this, or we're seeing the first 5 minutes of this.
Yeah.
Or sometimes 10 minutes, or sometimes you get the whole movie if you're lucky. But like, studios like, we'll just keep all this stuff in-house, do our own thing. That way we're like saving money and not like going into Hawk because Scott Pilgrim bombs or Jonah Hex bombs.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, we still got the Disney Expo, right? That's always a huge thing.
But that's in-house. Like, that's at least, like, yeah, we're controlling everything. You don't have to worry about, like, if you're, like, the 3 o'clock thing for, like, oh, I don't know, like, Superman, and then all of a sudden at 5 o'clock, like, Avengers dominates. It just blows you off the screen. Like, you only have, like, about an hour of engagement unless it's, like, unless something else just tanks.
Maybe we need that competition back, though. Maybe.
Maybe that would help. I guess so. Like, I, cause it was fun. Like, it was like, if you got to sit there the whole day, like I did, we did like the WB panel, like the first time, and there was a whole bunch of stuff, really cool people. Not so much the fans. They were kind of rude to, Megan Fox and, other Mila Kunis. That was rough.
Oh, I refuse to believe that fans at a Comic-Con were mean to women. Like,
that's... yeah. Like, when Josh Brolin wants to step in and, like, diffuse stuff, you're like, uh-oh. which happened. Oh. Like, that Jonah Hex panel was, it got a little dark. Like, we felt bad for, or, like, this is not fun. But, yeah, like, the competition does help, but I think they got tired of it, too, because then, like, any ground you make, you're just going to lose money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
I mean, I'm just going to say right now, because I know we both have it, Roger Rabbit.
Of course.
Because that's like the text everything's trying to do. Like, nothing has ever come close to doing it.
Right.
Which is very, it just shows you how much of a miracle that movie was.
Yeah.
Because it does do all, like, there is like fan servicing stuff, like, oh, Mickey and Bugs hanging out. But it's totally fine. Like, the mystery and the story are good. Nothing has come close to that. Like, the mystery on this, I thought, was lacking, because like, it's kind of resolved and pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, we know what Peter Pan's doing, why he's doing it. And then it's just like, well, now we got to stop him. There isn't some kind of like, oh my God, like, there's no freeway reveal.
Sure.
And Peter Pan isn't as strong of a villain as Judge Doom. And like, there isn't, well, like, Monterey Jack and other, and like Flounder get like sent to the bootleg DVD section, which is hilarious. I do like that bit, because that stuff is real.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's one of my favorite things about the movie. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, great movies like in the streaming world and stuff like that. But like, once you get down and dirty and into the bootleg world, and like once you get to the opposite end,
like, of, when you're at a thrift shop and you're like, what the hell is this?
Oh yeah. You get to some weird stuff, and it's no good.
But they kind of blow their wad on like the Peter Pan reveal and like what's going on. Whereas like, with Roger Rabbit, it like very carefully like draws the mystery out enough. Like, every time I watch it, like, oh yeah, like they never, like, you can kind of piece it, you would never have pieced it together, like, unless you like really just like knew.
Yeah.
Like, the Cloverfield logo is like the freeway, it would eventually be like the freeway logo. I think it's like the 118, like, overhead and stuff like that. Like, little things, like, oh, the red car, I know the history of the red car, but like, I don't know where all this is going. Whereas with Chippendale, the mystery is kind of secondary.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer, because there was a lot more you could do with Peter Pan, especially with what they're referencing, which is fucking brutal. Like, I didn't know about that story. I was like, woof. Like,
I don't think I know like all the details of it.
He was like, he did the voice for Peter Pan, and then like he hit puberty, and then they cast him aside, and he you know, became a drug addict and like was homeless, essentially. Like, it was rough.
That's
like
some dark stuff.
Well, the fact that Disney let them get away with that, I was like, wow.
It's crazy. Like, yeah, I mean, it is really just like a stunt of a movie, the fact that all of this stuff was allowed to be done. Like, it's pretty wild that it exists as it does.
And Roger Rabbit, like, there's more of a grounding, because it's about Eddie getting over the death of his brother, whereas this doesn't have that, because, like, how could you? But they do at least lay enough track with, like, Chip and Dale in school. Like, they're both just kind of, like, sad and alone. And then you do have, you know, Chip at the end, like, you know, actually, I needed you. Like, his mom would be like, hey, man, like, you just need to find a friend. Like, okay, like...
Yeah.
See, that's why I knew it wasn't totally cynical. Because, like, they do try to, like, give you the idea of their friendship. I do wish it had more, like, Gadget and Zipper, though, because it just seems like they needed to be more integral. Like, I know they're, like, off having, like, 47 kids or whatever, but, like... It does feel like they needed to be included a little more, because they were such a huge part of that show too, and like they would have their own POV about like why it fell apart, and like, but you don't really get that.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to another piece. You know, actually, just to kind of continue on with talking about, you know, how they managed to do this. I was thinking of the Super Smash Brothers video game series and how somehow behind the scenes, Nintendo has been able to strike deals with various IP holders to be able to get these characters from other video games into this giant Nintendo fighting game. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of like trying to appeal to this very specific moment in entertainment, especially millennials and that entire crowd that just seems to love crossovers. And I wonder if we're going to get more of that kind of stuff, like outside of just a weird little throwaway animated movie, like if we're going to actually start to get, you know, this character from this movie versus that character from that movie and, you know,
E.T. versus Batman.
Sure, why not E.T. versus
Batman? That was
Batman?
A good gag. I at least appreciate they went with, like, they at least showed you a scene from that movie. I'm like, yep, that's exactly how terrible it would be.
Yeah,
it would be. And really yet there bad. Still would be people that would cry when E.T. is like, I forgive you, Batman.
Yeah, they... It would be the most important movie in their life for sure.
It would be, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't, you know, it is just a crazy thing that this was able to be pulled together. And yeah, I don't know. It just makes me wonder, just like with Smash Brothers opening the doors for all these like cross studio collaborations, it makes me wonder if we're going to see more things in the world of movies like that.
You might, because I mean, in the 80s, it took Spielberg to like broker like Disney and Warner Brothers playing nice. And like Disney being kind of on the outs and just being down to be open to that. Like if that a year later, no way, Jose, would they let that happen.
Yeah.
Cause like they had Little Mermaids. They didn't need to like, hey, see our animation department's still good. Remember this? Whereas like the Looney Tunes are in that position now, which I think is why you get Space Jam too. Cause like as awesome as the Looney Tunes are, and they have little shorts on HBO Max, but like they're, cultural currency isn't really there anymore because they don't have anything to do with the properties. Whereas Disney's very steadfastly over the last 30 years for better and for worse, like made sure you cared about them or at least your kids had some sort of reverence for them.
Sure. Sure. Well, it's only a matter of time before we get a Marvel versus A24 movie. I'll watch that.
I don't think you'll ever get Mike Marvel versus DC because like that would take someone, one of the two, most likely be DC, be like way on the downside.
Yeah,
like where even Batman can't work anymore. So like, fuck it, can we just like get like Spider-Man and Batman, please? Like, fine, we'll do it.
How much do you think that would make? Like opening box office. Let's take a guess here.
I think it would probably be in the 200s.
Yeah, like if at
would,
least.
But it would have to be a ways out.
Yeah.
You know, like it'd have to be like, and I don't know how they would, because The Flash is going to be a big test of that.
Yeah.
Because even though like No Way Home did like the three Spider-Men, having the like a Flash do all the other Batman is going to be something interesting, especially with like how cursed that movie's just been.
It'll be a miracle if that movie even comes out at this point.
I think it's gonna, it has to, because like I know they're done. Like they wrapped.
Yeah, it's done.
So it's gonna come out and it's gonna be in theaters. Like they're not holding back from that, but I just don't see how it's gonna necessarily work unless like the Keaton of it all like saves it.
Yeah. Keaton.
Because like they've been trying to do, like they cast Flash, like him, Miller as Flash in like 2015, and they still haven't done a solo movie. And we're already gonna have two Aquaman, two Wonder Woman, and we're on another, a whole other Batman. And they still haven't gotten the Flash. It's amazing.
Absolutely wild.
And they've like, every director like has gone through it and like, nope, can't do it.
Well, let's move on to some more pieces. I have one more piece after this. What do you have next?
This one's kind of an easy one, but Despicable Me 3. I think they pulled a lot from, because like Trey Parker's villain was very much what Peter Pan is, except not as dark, but they kind of allude to like, you know, it's the same deal. Like once he hit puberty, like he was cast aside, had to go to a life of crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants everything to be what it was back in the day. Like, so all of this stuff is 80s aesthetic.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it, right?
I actually haven't seen the third one. I remember the trailers for it and that the fact that they were bringing Trey Parker in, and I thought it looked like it might be worth more. Checking out.
I wanted more Trey Parker and like the Gru's twin brother thing. I'm like, all right, like this kind of, you know, I get why they had to pivot to Minions because there really wasn't much more meat on the Gru bone.
Right, right.
Which is why you're getting now young Gru, because now he can be despicable again.
Sure. There you go. They're really, I was just in Universal Studios last week. They're really leaning on Gru still. Like, he's kind of a big deal there.
Well, they have the huge Minion.
Yeah.
I haven't been since, like, God, I haven't been to Universal in 10 years, unfortunately. But, like, Is the mini ride cool?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was all right. Like I've never really been a big fan of that series. Like I thought they were kind of fun, but not really. I mean, they're taking the reins with that Super Mario Brothers movie, so they better do me proud.
Well, that's gonna be the next thing. Like you watch, like in the next 10 years, like once they figure out you can just do animated video game movies, like Illumination's gonna clean up.
Yeah,
because you're gonna get Mario, and then they're gonna do like I'm sure you'll get like Metroid Prime. They'll do all the old games, and then that'll be sort of the dominant one. Even though superheroes will still be around, I'm sorry to say for you,
some of them. I like Ant-Man.
I know. I'm just like I always get annoyed at the whining. It's like we get it. You don't like it. Like you're not you specifically, but like other people. Yeah. Like it's fine. Like you don't have to be hyped for Thor, but like you know. Chill, like these things aren't going away. You yelling at them isn't gonna make them go away.
I love Ant-Man and Aquaman, probably the two that like people don't like, the people that love superhero movies.
Oh no, I love Ant-Man's the best overall series. Like I will, like Thor might, if Thor 4 is amazing, it could eclipse that, but like Ant-Man as a trilogy is like the best of Marvel for me.
Yeah, like it's so much fun.
And the stakes aren't as super high. Like you can just enjoy them. Those are the most rewatchable, I would say.
Yeah.
And they work.
It's fun, which is what superheroes should be.
Bingo. That's why they're the best ones.
So my last puzzle piece is actually going to be the 2002 comedy Death to Smoochie. With Edward Norton and Robin Williams as kids show actors who are just sad losers and weirdos, which when we're seeing the behind the scenes of all these people who were in the quote-unquote Chippendale Rescue Rangers show, they all have just, like, messed up lives as they go on. And, of course, Peter Pan, his whole messed up thing as the villain and everything like that. So there's just all kinds of sadness and darkness behind these characters who were big kids show heroes. And so I thought of Death to Smoochie, which is one of my favorites.
That's a good one. I wish DeVito would have directed more, but I get it. Like, you know, once Duplex bombed, I think it's like, I've had it. Like, I don't need to. I can just, I'm surprised he hasn't even directed a Sunny episode.
I know, that's crazy, because Death to Smoochie, even if it wasn't, like, critically successful, or box office successful,
it was not a box office success.
It's still, like, it's worth, like, there's no reason why he shouldn't have been able to do more, but like you said, Duplex bombed pretty bad, so.
I think at a certain point, you're just like, I'm a certain age, like, I just want to, like, have fun with, like, my new friends, and just, like, you know, just do gross stuff, and I don't need to, I don't need to direct, like, it's just stressful, I can imagine. No, and that's another thing Chippendale does really well too, is like they don't even overload the cameos when they go to like the seemingly good town, but it's like the main street.
Yeah.
Like that gag where they go to find the cheese guy.
Right.
Like they didn't overstep it. Most of them like, look, those are just animated characters.
Yeah.
That's why it works. It wasn't like Scar or something like that, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, or it wasn't like, here's the bad guy from, here's Shere Khan from Tailspin or something. Like, it was mostly just animated characters doing CD stuff.
Yeah.
Which I like. That's very much my jam, and it's why I'm very upset that like Happy Time Murders was such a disaster. Like I'm like, the one time they're going for like an R-rated thing like this, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of this ahead of time, but I'm also thinking of the animated segment from David Wayne's The Ten, which also just like a seedy animated town, basically.
Seedy,
you know?
Funhouse also functions that way.
Yeah,
like the whole you've seen the Disney TV Funhouse, right? Where they go to the Disney Vault.
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's one of those. I'm like, damn, like Smigel really, really went for it on that one. Like, I think Star guides them to the Disney Vault, and like they see like the uncut version of like Song of the South.
Oh, geez.
And other stuff like, or it's like Mickey's like, oh, come on, like this isn't so bad. Like, I'm funny. It's like, you're supposed to be funny.
I gotta watch that. That sounds, I wonder, is that on like YouTube or something? Or
it should be, because it's on the, because there's an SNL Best of TV Funhouse DVD. So I'm sure someone's uploaded that one.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that. That sounds great.
It's pretty good. Like, I don't think it's aired a lot, but like you could probably find it on YouTube.
Nice. Well, do you have any more pieces you wanted to bring up?
No, I think we got all the big ones. I mean, you know, like Roger Rabbit, Greg the Bunny, Despicable Me 3, Ted 2. A lot of stuff that's like playing with IP and playing with like, you know, convention culture, which even the convention I appreciated, because like it felt like walking on the floor, like this, not sad, but like, you know, everything, the way everything feels overstuffed and like overwhelming and just kind of like a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised as the pandemic continues to like wean down, if it ever ends, like actually, like if that kind of culture comes back, because people just want to like get out there and dress up and
yesterday you saw that, like the Star Wars Celebration, apparently it was very packed.
Yeah.
And they got everyone to go. Like Harrison Ford showed up.
People are out of their minds.
Then again, he doesn't have any regard for his body, clearly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that's it then. Do you have any other like closing thoughts about Rescue Rangers before we wrap it up?
I'm very curious of two things. One, if they'd released it in theaters, because I think it would have cleaned up. I don't know if it would have had I don't know if it would have had a big weekend to drop, because maybe some parents might think like, oh, this is a little much, because sometimes it does get a little much. And two, I just really enjoyed it. It was something I was very skeptical about, but then once I saw The Lonely Island signed up, I'm like, okay, they must have something. Like, there must be some sort of spin, and they took it the right way. They didn't try to just make a Rescue Rangers episode. They're just like, let's just break this all down. Like this whole enterprise. Like we see this for what it is, and we're just gonna have fun with it. It's not Lord and Miller level like joke per scene, because that's just very difficult to do, and even they struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah,
but you know, it was a worthwhile endeavor. It's only 1 hour and 40 minutes, and you know, I enjoyed myself. My 15-year-old niece really loved it. I'm sure my daughter will love it. Like it's stuff, you know, I just like having stuff that like we can all like enjoy.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I do think that like 20-year-old me would have just fucking loved this movie. You know what I mean?
I wanted to stop and pause it to read all the sign gags. Like when he opens the freezer, there's like the Frozen dinner, the Foghorn Leghorn chicken dinner, and there's like another one. And like, I'm like pausing, like, what's on all the stuff on the signs?
The movie posters are great. One of the best things.
Mm-hmm. They do. Like Roger Rabbit does a good job of that too. Cause there's like a Porky Pig poster just like for like a show. You're like, oh wow. Like you notice all these little details, and that's why it didn't feel cynical to me. Like that's why it worked, because like they need to stuff it with stuff and that you want to go back to. It wasn't just we're gonna reference stuff for the sake of referencing stuff.
I wonder if I'll like it better if I rewatch it.
I think you would, and just kind of like pause it once in a while to just kind of read the stuff in the background, because it's great.
That's where the best stuff.
It really took. It was like Simpsons-esque like sign gags and stuff.
Yeah,
like stuff I really appreciated. I'm like, oh, and if, like again, you don't need to know it to know it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like it isn't that kind of thing, but it works. Like they stuff the world, they build the world out with enough details to where it just doesn't feel like Disney just made them do it. And they're like, all right, well, we guess we all need a new kitchen.
Right. Well, I think that does it for Rescue Rangers. Chauncey, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
George Carlin's American Dream is the last movie I watched. The movie I watched actually after Chippendale. Yeah. Have you seen that yet?
I haven't. I want to. I'm a huge fan.
Like people give Apatow a ton of shit, but like as a comedy historian, he's about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Like they really go into detail about what made Carlin work, why Carlin works. They really hammer down like the empathy, like his empathy for people is why even like the most searing bits still land, you know, and why like other stuff doesn't. And then I also saw Jackass 4.5.
Like also, I haven't watched that either, but I'm going to. I love Jackass 4.
Me too. So. Me too. I love all of them, and the 0.5s are usually like I can see why this didn't make the movie, but they kind of cross it with like a documentary about like why they made the movie, just the process of it, as well as bits that like I'm surprised that didn't make it into the movie. Like there's some brutal ones. You're like, wow, like the elephant hunting is one, and then the knockdown clown game like is a kind of a bookend to that.
Okay.
And they show like what happened with COVID, like just them going through the whole testing process each day on set. You're like, oh, this is actually very interesting. And learning how they had to navigate all of that.
Well, I'm going to have to check that out. One of my friends told me that it has probably the grossest gag of any Jackass. I don't know what he was talking about.
Can I just tell you the title of it?
Sure.
I think it's called like a sashimi sweatsuit. It's one of those I had to leave the room. Like I don't usually get squeamish at stuff they do. It's like, I just, cause I'm thinking about like the texture and the smell and just like the visual. I'm like, nope. And there's like a small coda to it, like one of those, like a day later, you know, this happened. You're like,
oh no.
And they had fun on they show you the Paramount lot a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like they filmed like the big opening there. And then they also other things like, you know, we're on the Paramount lot where they filmed Godfather, Chinatown, and that word. Like it's really interesting Steve to see all of them interact, and like how they found the new people is pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
And the prank at the very end, remember Dark Shark?
Definitely.
They pull a prank on him at the end that's so mean, but it's so funny because he's scared out of his mind, he's crying, and but it works.
Oh no.
It's so that's good. Amazing. It's only an hour and a half and you can and it's great. Like it makes you feel so much better. Like that's the best thing about Jackass during all of this. It's just been a salve, like all four of them.
I'm watching that when I'm done with this whole marathon weekend of podcasting that I got lined
it's
up.
It's a great way to come down. I promise you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Chauncey, this is great. Why don't you tell people where they can find you and your podcast and everything else you're up to?
So I write about the Rams for LAFB Network. My Twitter handle is BigChaunce64. I'm great after like 12 o'clock watching movies. Like, I'm sure you'll get a lot of drunk ambulance thoughts tonight.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because I can't wait to see it. And then you can also find my podcast, LA Podfidential, where we talk about sports. We'll do superhero news, movie news. Like last week, we talked about Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. We talked about like the Thor 4 trailer and the casting, the Rita Moreno being Dom's grandma in Fast 10 is just delightful.
Nice. Nice.
Like logical and also amazing. Perfect. Good for her. Good for her.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a sports pop culture show. It's really fun. We just kind of hang out. Nothing serious, low stakes. And then I also had a guest on talking about Better Call Saul's half season and just the show at large. Nathan.
Oh, nice. I'll have to listen to that one.
It's good. Like we really like that's like the one time I got to nerd out because my co-host don't watch it.
Nice. Well, awesome. It was great having you back, Chauncey. Hopefully we'll get you back again sometime soon.
I'm around for the fall, man. I want to get that Five Timers Club jacket.
Yes. Hey guys, this is David, and I wanted to tell you about Newsly. It's an all-in-one audio super app for iOS and Android. And what it does is really cool because I don't know if you're like me, I don't have a lot of time for just sitting around and reading stuff. I'm always either driving or doing something, and just to like sit down and read, it's like, you know, who has time for that? And so with Newsly, you could basically turn any web article into kind of like a podcast, and it reads the article in a natural human voice from basically anything on the internet, anything on the web. And this way, you know, you don't have to sit there reading and scrolling. You can listen to it just like you would a podcast. And it's got podcasts too. Piecing It Together is on there. But then you could also find articles from all kinds of topics, from, you know, entertainment and movies to sports and tech and business, science, all that kind of stuff. So really, if it's out there on the web, you can find it and you can listen to it. And I've been using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. And you can download Newsly right now for free from newsly.me. Check out the link in the show notes. It's available, like I said, on Android and iOS in the App Store and the Play Store. And there's a premium version available, and my listeners can get a 1 month free premium subscription by using the promo code PIECINGIT, but all of the I's are ones. So that's PIECING1T, piecing it, but all of the I's are ones. And I've got that in the show notes too. If you're like me out driving around listening to stuff, you can't pull over right now, you can check it in the show notes and find that promo code and get that free 1 month premium subscription to Newsly. All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Chippendale Rescue Rangers. Thank you to Chauncey for joining me again. I always have a good time talking to Chauncey on these podcasts. Check out his podcast. I was on fairly recently talking about our most anticipated movies, and hopefully we'll do something like that again sometime soon. So if you are enjoying Piecing It Together, make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Newsly, wherever it is you're listening, make sure you're subscribed. And if there's a 5-star button, we would appreciate it if you hit that 5-star button. And you could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And last but not least, don't forget about the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. You know, this weekend, I'm recording episodes on Mad God, Men, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, Ambulance, our trailers episode, and Top Gun Maverick. I can't possibly put them all out in 1 week, so they will go to the Patreon first, and that's where they'll be exclusive once they're edited and ready to go, and you'll be able to hear them early over there on the Patreon until the timing is right to release them on the main feed. I also post bonus content, also stuff from Awesome Movie Year, bonus content from them, also stuff from my music career. I mentioned at the top of the show I'm working on a film right now. I'll be posting some sneak peeks soon. Also, once I finish that movie, I will finally be able to get back to work on my next album, which then I will have a lot of new stuff to post on there, music related. So yeah, check it out. Patreon.com/ByDavidRosen if you really love what I do and want to show a little support. So let's close this out with a piece of music. And I know I've played this on the show before on things with the kind of vibe like a Chippendale Rescue Rangers. I'm going to do it again. It's a track called Rock and Roll Billy that I made about one of my good friends named Rock and Roll Billy. This was part of a little animated cartoon thing I made back in college. And I had this song in my head and it was supposed to sound like a Chippendale's Rescue Rangers song or like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or one of these like Saturday morning cartoon kind of things about Billy and his dog Dexter and about how they're crime fighters. And it's a ridiculous little cartoon thing. I'll put a link in the show notes, I guess. And I hope you enjoyed the song Rock and Roll Billy. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Rock and Roll Billy. Rock and roll Billy, you know we like some picture every day, getting high, fighting crime the Billy way.
Rock and roll Billy,
you know he's got the Dexter on his side in a leopard skin truck and a wedding ride.
Rock and roll Billy,
evil doers better change the criminal ways, cause it comes Billy and Dexter to save the day.
Rock and roll Billy,
ever since he was a young boy and Dexter was just a pup, he's
rock and roll Billy, rock and roll Billy.
Don't you try to stop him, cause he doesn't give a flying fuck, he's
rock and roll Billy, rock and roll Billy.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.